Information is free.
The law.
There is hope.
When ignorance is converted into knowledge.
We care.
Here to border
and it shows.
The law.
The country.
You will remember nothing you have seen or heard here.
Whether he went on with the diary, or whether he did not cooperate, it made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.
He had committed, would still have committed, even if he had never set pen to paper, the essential crime that contained all others in itself, thought crime. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the 127th episode of MediaMonarchy.com. It's June 12th, 2009. My name is James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show. As we begin the summer of rage with the museum murder, the left-right charade, and more problem, reaction, solution. We got 9/11, Truth and Lies, Police State 2009, Brzezinski, Kucinich, Paul, and HR 1207, School Lockdowns and Lemonheads Lawsuit, Military, Media, Disinfo, and the Depop Agenda, plus Anniversaries, Elections, and Digital Conversions. All the news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups are here on episode 127 of MediaMonarchy.com. Timely new music from the brother-sister duo known as the Fiery Furnaces. That's their new single, The End Is Near. The time has come. And yes, it has. It's June 12th, 2009. It's episode 127 of MediaMonarchy.com. My name's James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show. Coming to you live, as always, every Friday morning at 10 a.m. Pacific time from the home base of the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org. And of course, still happy, still stoked to have our new affiliate, zeropointradio.com. Also blasting out on 92.3 in the heart of Casper, Wyoming, 11 a.m. Mountain Time, and the worldwide home of free speech, revereradio.net. It's 1 p.m. Eastern Time. If I can just put out the call, if we can pick up a central live time slot, that would be fantastic. Also, big thanks to Free Radio Olympia 98.5, frolympia.org, rebroadcasting Media Monarchy Saturday mornings at 8 a.m. Pacific Time, BoulderFreeRadio.com, KBFR 93.9, CascadiaPublicRadio.org, and of course, you know the sites, FaceSpace, YouTube, Yahoo, IM, Skype, Twitter, iTunes, RadioForAll.net, and Archive.org are the ways that you can get and share and learn and spread the word about MediaMonarchy.com. I'm in a really foul mood. I'm going to try and keep my wits about me. But as all the crazy shit is swirling around, I hit this point yesterday where I wanted to just say, you know what? Screw all this. We're totally screwed, and anything I can try and do isn't going to save us anyway. Just like we heard, the end is near. The time has come. There's nothing that will save you now. But I can't do it. I can't walk away yet. I have to do something. So hopefully as I push old friends' buttons on Facebook, starting flame wars, but I think they understand. And if you don't understand, this is why I'm doing it. And I try and do MediaMonarchy.com, the site and show, in a way to break down all the insanities. And I know a lot of you probably think, oh, well, they're all liars, both sides, which is kind of true. But they're including the alternative media in that. And I'm not saying the alternative media is always right. But we're trying to point out the phony left-right paradigm. It's not left versus right, black versus white, Jew versus Arab. It's the state versus you. We've got so much to go through. We're going to have to blast through it. It's going to be breakneck speed on episode 127. We glance at the breaking news right now, and we, of course, note that Iran is holding historic elections. Either way, it's probably going to be a big deal. We, of course, have the tobacco bill going to Obama. We've got Clark Rockefeller, or at least the German who passed himself off as a Rockefeller, just found guilty of kidnapping. West Virginia names coal as its official state rock, and Oregon health reform bills win final approval. We also, of course, note that the U.S. House of Representatives is set to debate H.R. 1207, Ron Paul's audit the Fed bill. Those are just some of the bits that are at the top of Google News, which we will, of course, click back to periodically throughout the episode to make sure nothing horrible has happened while we're covering the news, the horrible things that have already happened in the past week. So we began the show with a quote. If you don't know, you better. From, of course, Eric Blair, a.k.a. George Orwell's 1984. So this last Monday, June 8th, we had the 60th anniversary. Orwell's Big Brother, 60 years later. So we'll hit a report from Wired Magazine, This Day in Tech. 60 years ago, Monday, 1984 is published, and it's official. In the face of all the monolithic state, the little guy has no chance at all. Orwell's dystopian novel, one to stand alongside Aldous Huxley's Brave New World, is a towering work of futuristic pessimism, posits a grim society where the government is all-powerful and all-knowing and the individual spirit has been effectively extinguished. Big Brother, a seemingly benevolent but terribly vengeful ruler who may or may not exist, is the personification of the state. To keep the masses docile and pliant, books are banned, surveillance is everywhere, and all information is closely guarded by the state. Huxley envisioned a different future, one which perhaps more closely mirrors our present. In Brave New World, there is no reason to ban a book since people are too busy pursuing their hedonistic distractions to bother picking one up. And of course, we've noted many, many times here that these books weren't these hypothetical, oh gosh, this might happen in the future. These guys were insiders. They knew what was coming down the pike. More so Aldous Huxley. But we don't have time to go into that. 1984 is, of course, told through the eyes of Winston Smith, a minor civil servant in the Ministry of Truth, whose job it is to rewrite history for the totalitarian state of Oceania. His spirit hasn't been entirely squashed, though, and he chafes under the yoke, eventually joining a rebellion against the state. He is soon, of course, betrayed, arrested, and tortured, and in the end, Smith wins his freedom by accepting the assertion that 2 + 2... always makes a 5. The book yielded a bounty of new coinages, thought police, doublethink, the aforementioned Big Brother, and the especially sinister newspeak all entered the language through 1984. Even though the author's pseudonym, his real name of course being Eric Arthur Blair, became a chilling adjective, Orwellian is applied to any characteristic display of totalitarian might. 1984 is often described, mainly by conservatives, as an attack against socialism. Orwell, who called himself a socialist, although contemporary scholarship suggests his political philosophy was ambiguous and fluid, and they all disputed this. He made it clear on at least one occasion that his novel was aimed squarely at totalitarianism, which he considered a perversion of socialism. His 1944 novel, Animal Farm, was a pointed attack against the Soviet system, which Orwell believed had betrayed socialism's true spirit. In any case, Orwell didn't live to see the long-range social impact of his work. He had been in poor health for years and died in January 1950 at only 46. We've got two flashbacks on MediaMonarchy.com, Orwell's house surrounded by CCTV cameras. That jumps back to April of 2007. And of course, the future has caught up with us. That's from March of 2007 on MediaMonarchy.com. So this last Monday, June 8th, the 60th anniversary of Orwell's 1984. We're going to hit a few less disgusting media notes. And again, in a greater world, Media Monarchy would perhaps focus much, much more on just all the media memes, predictive programming, music, film, television, and the like. Maybe we'll get there someday. From Ars Technica.com, low power FM radio gains a small victory over the FCC. Supporters of low power FM, LPFM radio, won a victory last Friday when a federal appeals court rejected a lawsuit to stop the FCC from protecting LPFM stations from full power station signal interference. Quote, "This is terrific news for the LPFM community," declared Sakura Sanders of the Prometheus Radio Project, PrometheusRadio.org, which helps LPFMs. "Now these stations can focus on serving their local communities rather than live in fear of displacement due to the whims of their full-powered neighbors." On the other hand, the advocacy group that defended the LPFM service was circumspect about the win. "The decision in the courts merely protects the status quo," noted the Media Access Project, MediaAccess.org. In a statement they sent to Ars Technica, "Congress still must pass legislation to allow more low-power FM stations to operate nationwide." There is a PDF of the Court of Appeals decision that you can download. And so we send that out to our fine friends in the LPFM community that are rebroadcasting MediaMonarchy.com, and I thank you. This is kind of appropriate, as Evan Dando and the Lemonheads will be in Portland tomorrow night. I started to go back through and listen to the older and even the newer Lemonheads records. That, of course, the older ones take me right back to high school. And It's a Shame About Ray and Come On Feel the Lemonheads. So I got kind of excited, so I will probably go see the Lemonheads tomorrow night. However, from the Associated Press, as well as the Insider.com, as well as the New York Times, Lemonheads Dando sues General Motors over alleged song copy. Lemonheads founder Evan Dando suing General Motors, saying the auto giant copied one of his songs for an ad. Dando sued General Motors and advertising and licensing firms in federal court last Thursday, claiming the automaker violated his copyright on the Lemonheads song, It's a Shame About Ray. The complaint alleges the song was re-recorded and included in a 2008 campaign for Chevrolets and Buicks. Dando seeks damages and a portion of profits from the campaign. GM, which sought federal bankruptcy protection this week, and the licensing firm Ash & Spencer Music Incorporated did not immediately respond to calls last Friday. The last note from the Associated Press, the Lemonheads had several hits in the 90s, including Into Your Arms and a remake of Mrs. Robinson. Fortunately, from a website which name escapes me at the moment, oh, it's TuneLaw.com. On their YouTube channel, they actually have the commercial in question. So, let's do a little A-B. Let's listen quickly to the GM ad.
Everyone likes to hunt for a bargain. So this Memorial Day, we've quietly placed specially marked Chevys on our lots. You might have to look hard to find them, but when you do, you'll get great deals on most 08s. Like $2,000 cash back on many Cobalts in stock. With an EPA estimated 33 miles per gallon on the highway. Find the arrow, find the deal, but only for 10 days. See your local Chevy dealer today.
So that's the commercial. Then let's hear the clip from the Lemonheads.
I've never been too good with names. The cellar door was open. I could never stay away.
So again, here's the beginning part of the GM ad.
We've been too good with names.
Everyone likes to hunt for a bargain. So this Memorial Day, we've quietly placed special marked Chevys on our lots. You might have to look hard to find them, but when you do, you'll get great deals.
And
on
that's where
like 2000
the similarities stop.
In stock. With an EPA
the melody goes off, and this doesn't mirror It's a Shame About Ray. I don't find in any way.
See your local Chevy dealer today.
And, of course, we won't be seeing our local Chevy dealer today. Which does remind me, on my way to the studios here, I passed by the big Cadillac Hummer dealer. And it's nice to kind of flip at the bird and go, ha-ha, what's up, Hummer dealer? You're going to fucking China soon. Sorry. Now, I'm all about artist protection. However, this is going to be a tough one to prove, as we just listened to it. You can listen to it more on your own. It's going to be tough. However, for a great example of copyright infringements, you should read about Tom Waits versus Frito-Lay and the rest. And I give you the link over to Wikipedia, where it goes through Tom Waits' lengthy list of lawsuits against the corporate bastards who have tried to rip him off. Now, someone like Tom Waits, who is so original sounding, he can always win his cases because no one sounds like him. He can easily say, you're trying to sound like me, you're damaging my reputation, you're trying to trick my fans into thinking that I'm selling out and shilling for Cheetos. He's gone on record many, many times bashing artists who whore themselves out for advertising, telling Michael Jackson, just ditch the music, man, just get a suit and go work for Pepsi and be done with it. I did learn a little bit about Tom Waits and Frito-Lay and a little bit of media law. back in the college days. And again, that's something that really interests me. However, things are a little too dire to spend any more time on this. The other interesting media note, and wow, we're rock reeling and remembering through the alternate 90s here, again from the Associated Press, smells like civic spirit. Nirvana bassist runs for office. Nirvana's former bassist is running for clerk of a rural county to protect Washington State's method of letting candidates name their own party affiliation. Chris Novoselic is running for clerk of Wakayakum County in western Washington State. Novoselic is head of his local chapter of the Grange Party, a civic organization. His election paperwork declares that he's running under the Grange Party banner, even though the Grange isn't a political party. Novoselic tells the Daily World newspaper that he's protesting the state's system that lets candidates say what party they prefer when running for office. He says that that's confusing for voters and lets candidates appropriate the names of private associations. All that doesn't exactly make sense to me, and it's a little bit of splitting hairs and needles in haystacks. However, it's still interesting to see Chris Novoselic still being involved in politics, as he always was. Now it gets a little uglier, although we're still dealing with the media world. It's the update, Carradine questions sex acts and secret societies. We, of course, send you back the flashback to the original posting from last week. David Carradine found dead of apparent suicide. Again, from the Associated Press, Carradine family seeks FBI forensics expert help. The family of David Carradine is asking the FBI and a private forensics expert to help investigate the Kung Fu actor's death. Attorney Mark Garagos said last Saturday, the same day Thai police said surveillance footage indicated no one had entered his hotel room before he died. Carradine's brother Keith met last Friday with the FBI and filed reports that could lead to the agency opening its own inquiry, said Garagos, who represents Keith Carradine. The family will also seek a private autopsy by famed forensic pathologist Dr. Michael Batten to determine whether another person could have been involved. The actor's family hopes the body will arrive in L.A. by Monday. It did, but no other specifics at that time. Garago said the family intervened because of conflicting information about Carradine's death and a lack of direct information from Thai authorities. All we really know is not much more than what the public knows, and that's disturbing. We do have a link to the New York Daily News where Carradine's ex-wife in old court papers said that Carradine was a fan of potentially deadly, deviant sex acts. But let's get to the contradictions. First, from InfoWars, asking the question, was actor Carradine murdered for investigating secret societies? During a segment that aired on the Larry King Show, and I was unable to find this specific clip for you, CNN correspondent Jerry Pinacoli says the death of David Carradine, quote, was abnormal. The death was not natural. Later in the segment, Pinacoli says a filmmaker and director named Damien Chapa, who worked with Carradine, said he, quote, believes that there was foul play. Continuing with a quote from Jerry Pinacoli on Larry King Show, quote, and he said that no one else knows this but his family, Carradine's family and friends and people closest to him, but David was very interested in investigating and disclosing secret societies, so whatever that means. It means you can end up dead. And it goes on. This from Kurt Nimmo. Author claims Carradine's father, John Carradine, was a member of the OTO, Ordo Templi Orientis. In a response to a review of the book Blood on the Altar, The Secret History of the World's Most Dangerous Secret Society, author Craig Heimbichner mentions several prominent members of the OTO, the Order of the Temple of the East, or the Order of Oriental Templars, including John Carradine, father of the recently deceased David Carradine, who allegedly planned to investigate and disclose secret societies. Martin P. Starr, author of The Unknown God, W.T. Smith, and the Thelemites, or Thelemites, Thelema, Starr also claims the Elder Carradine was a member of Aleister Crowley's co-Masonic OTO. In the book Sex and Rockets, The Occult World of Jack Parsons, John Carter and the late Robert Anton Wilson write that Carradine is said to have read poetry at the opening of the Agape Lodge of the OTO in Pasadena, California. OTO draws from the traditions of the Freemasonic, Rosicrucian, and Illuminist movements of the 18th and 19th centuries, the crusading Knights Templars of the Middle Ages, and early Christian Gnosticism, and the pagan mystery schools. We've got a headline from Lauren Coleman and the Copycat Effect, asking the question, was Carradine killed by an Illuminatus? And finally, an update, again from Kurt Nimmo and the Associated Press. Forensics expert determines David Carradine did not commit suicide. The AP is reporting that an independent forensics expert who examined David Carradine's body has concluded the actor did not commit suicide. Carradine's family, quote, released a statement from Dr. Michael Badden, who said Carradine's death wasn't a suicide. He said further info from Thailand is needed for a final determination. On June 4th, a preliminary police investigation concluded that he has hanged himself with a cord used with the suite's curtains. It cited police as saying there was no sign that he had been assaulted. More than anyone I've ever met, David Carradine was a generous man who loved life, recalled Look writer-director Adam Rifkin, who cast Carradine as his father in National Lampoon's Homo Erectus. I find it extremely hard to believe that David, who was such a hard-working, energetic, and beloved Hollywood legend, was done in by his own hand. Carradine questions sex acts and secret societies. I doubt we've heard the last of that. We move to the second big list of updates from the big story last week on MediaMonarchy.com, and we noted last week, as we were covering the curious crash of Flight 447 and the apparent supposed suicide of Carradine, that it really reminded me of my recent conversation with Alex Constantine about the curious crash of Flight 3407 and the supposed apparent suicide of NXS lead singer Michael Hutchence. Alex wrote me and pointed out, of course, that the Carradine situation does look fishy, and of course, it's always made to make them look foolish and silly and embarrass them. His take on Air France Flight 447 is that it is probably what it seems. But let's get to it. Flight 447, Week 2, Wreckage, Questions, Bodies, and Black Boxes. An ugly list of headlines for you. Starting at the top, Search for Air France Flight 447 reveals astonishing pollution of the world's oceans. Not something you thought would come into play in this story. That comes from naturalnews.com. And again, we note when they first said they found debris from the plane, it was just sea trash. It was pallets and the like. Down the list we go. Possible bodies, wreckage from Air France Flight 447 found. That's from Wikinews. Two bodies and a ticket found near the crash site. That's from the Washington Post, as well as the Associated Press. More passengers' bodies found from CNN. 24 error messages sent by Flight 447, again from Wikinews. French minister warns about alleged Airbus debris. Another weather enviro note, as we've noted the strange weather swirling around the world. A 6.0 earthquake hit the mid-Atlantic Ocean in the midst of the search for debris from Flight 447. That's from the Times of India. Of course, there are many videos. We won't play any clips on this right now, but there's bodies and a bag from doomed Air France jet. French recover body near the site. Three more bodies found. 15 more bodies found. Air France tail found. And now the U.S. joins in the hunt for the black boxes. That's again from the Associated Press. As well, finding the vertical stabilizer. That's just another word for the tail. What we note in the similarities between this and the crash just months after 9/11, already rattled public smacked in the face yet again with the crash into Long Island. And wouldn't you know it, it was an Airbus 330. The tail fin fell off. It looks to be a similar situation. Can the crash be solved without the black box, asks Time magazine. Key figures in the global battle against illegal arms trade lost in Flight 447. That's from the Sunday Herald. Air France crash investigator likes to blame pilots and protect manufacturers. That's from BusinessInsider.com. And that does relate to Flight 3407. It's pilot error. We can blame the pilots. Even if there's nothing fishy, nothing false flaggy about what's going on, we'll see the investigators get involved and pin the blame on the dead folks. Meanwhile, the gangsters, banksters, and business jerks get away. Terror names linked to doomed flight. Two passenger names shared the names of radical Muslims. That's from Sky News. And finally, an interesting note that I did save. They've, of course, fixed it. Which again reminds me to remind you to always save copies of articles, especially as the news is coming out fast and furious. You got to catch it before it goes down the memory hole. The Telegraph, the UK Telegraph, not a small paper by any means, they ran the full story on the horror on board Flight 446. It was 447, folks. Again, will this be the last we hear of it? I doubt it. So that was Flight 447, Week 2. Wreckage, questions, bodies, and black boxes. So as everything's swirling around, all these other things, all the needles in haystacks and egregious things going on in the world, internationally and at home, two big things that kind of go together for me. Two things happening today. And we mentioned one of them at the top of the show. Iranian elections and digital conversions. From, appropriately enough, Press TV out of Iran, Iranians start heading to the polls on Super Friday. The polls have opened in Iran in a presidential election which has generated intense excitement among the electorate as never before. It's already looking like polling is going to be extended to cater to the demand in what's already going to be a record turnout in a closely contested election. And we have a link for you to Time Magazine noting one of the sides pointing out the possibility for vote fraud. By casting his ballot at about 8:15 Iranian time in the morning, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, became one of the first voters. In a brief speech to the waiting journalists, he commended the passionate yet peaceful nature of the election campaign and called on everyone to use their right to vote, which he also described as both a religious and logical duty. In addition to incumbent President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, who is seeking a second four-year term, Super Friday's vote includes former Prime Minister Mir Hossein Mousavi, former Parliament Speaker Mehdi Karoubi, and Secretary of the Expediency Council Mohsen Razeh. Over 46 million Iranians aged 18 and above are eligible to vote today in the 10th presidential election since the Islamic Revolution in 1979 deposed the U.S.-backed monarchy. In addition to the 45,000-plus ballot boxes ready to receive the people's votes throughout the country, the sizable Iranian expatriate community is also catered for, with arrangements in place for about 130 countries worldwide. However, what's happening here on the homeland front, the day is here. Oh my God, American set for TV digital switchover. This from the Big Brother Corporation, the British Broadcasting Corporation, the BBC. More than 2 million households in the United States will be faced with blank television screens when stations switch off their analog signal for good. The nationwide transition to digital services has seen a last-minute rush to buy converter boxes and TVs. In total, the U.S. authorities have spent $2 billion to smooth the transition. But according to the FCC, there are still 2.2 million households which have made no preparations. U.S. television viewers have been bombarded with a series of adverts over recent weeks warning them that the analog signal would be switched off on Friday and urging them to buy a set-top converter box if they didn't want to lose reception. We note the two episodes from my man, Clyde Lewis, in the Ground Zero Lounge. All about it. And that's, of course, Panopticon 1 and 2. Where he notes that, of course, we see the feds bending over backwards because they're not going to let a sizable amount of the population get switched off from the propaganda tit. Although, I can't think of anything better than those 2.2 million households that have made no preparations. Maybe it's because they realize that, for the most part, television is a big, steaming pile of brainwashing. Specifically engineered with the flicker rate in laboratories to put you in a sleepy, sleepy alpha state. We move to another anniversary, the same day as the publishing of 1984. However, this one is June 8th, 1967, when the USS Liberty was attacked by Israel in international waters. Again, perhaps not so appropriately from the Iranian Press TV. A deadly Israeli attack on a U.S. ship, an incident largely kept in the dark by Washington, receives new attention with survivors reliving the painful memory. USS Liberty survivors gathered in Washington on Monday to commemorate the 42nd anniversary of the incident and expound on how they were sprayed with bullets by America's closest ally and beneficiary. On June 8, 1967, the unarmed spy ship USS Liberty was on duty in international waters off the Sinai Peninsula when it was bombarded by Israeli fighter jets and torpedo boats. The two-hour-long attacks killed at least 34 sailors, wounded 173 others, and nearly sunk the ship. The attack on the Liberty came at a time when Israel had engaged in a brief but intense war with Egypt and its Arab allies, which coincided with the U.S. war on Vietnam. Although the ship was clearly marked as an American vessel, Israelis declared the attack on Liberty as simply a case of friendly fire and mistaken identity. Despite overwhelming evidence to the contrary, former U.S. President Lyndon Baines Johnson accepted the Israeli claim and canceled all investigations into the incident. It was a case of mistaken identity. I do not care if every man drowned and the ship sank. We will not embarrass an ally, Johnson, quote, had told his opponents who demanded an open congressional hearing to address the Israeli claim. USS Liberty survivor Rick Almet, however, begged to differ, quote, there was a conspiracy between our government and Israel. So that's the reason why they didn't pursue it and why investigations were covered up, because of the alliance of Israel and the United States. We have embedded up in this anniversary posting, of course, the hour-long documentary, The Loss of Liberty, The Loss of USS Liberty, more specifically. Classic false flag operation. USS Liberty, June 8th, 1967, attacked by Israel in international waters. And if that doesn't set us up for the biggest story of the week, I don't know what else does. Elderly ex-military racist opens fire at the D.C. Holocaust Museum. And as I note at the top of this massive posting, again, we see the return of homegrown terror. Remember, when the fake conservatives are in power, the enemy is abroad. They're over there. We got to get them over there so they don't get us here. But then when the phony left is in favor, the enemy is within. Again, with a story this massive, I can't do it all justice. I can't go through all the bits. It's not like some of the stories where those of us in the smaller alternative media are doing a lot of the work in digging and contextual posting. There's no shortage of information about this. So let's get it from, of course, the Associated Press by way of military.com, retired Navy captain attacks Holocaust Museum. An 88-year-old gunman with a violent and virulently anti-Semitic past opened fire with a rifle inside the crowded U.S. Holocaust Memorial Museum on Wednesday, June 10th, fatally wounding a security guard before being shot himself by other officers. The gunman was identified by Washington area news radio station WTOP as a retired Navy captain. Imagine that. One of the crazy shooters in America being ex-military. Gee, that never happens. While also the Secure Community Network, a clearinghouse of info to help Jewish communities be safe, said he is a retired Naval Reserve officer. The assailant, James Von Brunn. That's V-O-N-B-R-U-N-N. The assailant, James Von Brunn, was hospitalized in critical condition, leaving behind a sprawling investigation by federal and local law enforcement and expressions of shock from the Israeli government and a prominent Muslim organization. Washington Police Chief Kathy Lanier said the gunman was engaged by security guards immediately after entering the door with a rifle. The second he stepped into the building, he began firing. Law enforcement officials said Von Brunn, a white supremacist, was under investigation in the shooting and that his car was found near the museum and tested for explosives. The weapon was a .22 caliber rifle. They spoke on condition of anonymity, saying they were not authorized to discuss the investigation that is just beginning. Museum officials identified the dead guard as Stephen T. Johns, a 6-year veteran of the facility. In an email, Director Sarah Bloomfield said he died heroically in the line of duty. Von Brunn has a racist, anti-Semitic website and even wrote a book called Kill the Best Gentiles, alleging a Jewish conspiracy to destroy the white gene pool. In 1983, he was convicted of attempting to kidnap members of the Federal Reserve Board and served more than 6 years in prison. He was arrested 2 years earlier outside the room where the board was meeting, carrying a revolver, knife, and sawed-off shotgun. At the time, police said Von Brunn wanted to take the members hostage because of high interest rates and the nation's economic difficulties. Again, from Copycat Effect, Holocaust Museum gunfight, where he runs down, of course, all the Twilight language. And, of course, always nearby events are, of course, Masonic obelisks and other symbology. What gets really ugly, and what really starts to piss me off, and what really, really had me going the last couple days, and again, what makes me want to say, you know what, just chuck all this, because you guys don't get it. No matter whatever happens, whenever it starts to break down, you'll always fall back lockstep into your phony left-right bullshit. We, of course, note how this relates to the Tiller Killer. Abortion Dr. Tiller, gunned down at Kansas Church, and of course the Arkansas military recruiter. We noted several months ago, until we finally left him alone, that Glenn Beck, even though he may talk the talk, he certainly does not walk the walk, and we knew that he is no friend to the Patriot community, much less anyone else. As if there was any doubt before, let there be no doubt now. Glenn Beck is a government disinfo operative tasked with taking down the 9/11 Truth and Patriot movements. In fact, Fox News, as a primary fount of Operation Mockingbird, is tasked with attacking not only the 9/11 Truth movement, but the pro-liberty and Constitution movements as well.
One of the, Mike, let me go to you. One of the guys, or one of the groups that I've been warning about for a very long time are these 9/11 truthers. It is the information that we have at this point is this guy is a hero in the 9/11 truther community. Don't know if that's true or not. That is the early report. These are people that, I mean, it's totally fine to speak out against the Fed. But these are whacked out conspiracy. The government has planned 9/11. The Jews were involved, etc., etc. And from what we have seen in early reports, this guy is being held up as somebody they liked him because he'll actually do something about it.
Yeah. You know, unfortunately, crazy hate doesn't know any bounds. So whether it's Von Braun today at the Holocaust Museum, whether it's the Muslim extremist shooting the private at the recruiting center down in Arkansas, whether it's the abortion doctor getting shot, there's something. Whether these things happen in group, whether they serve somehow in these psychopathic minds to fuel each other's actions, whether they serve somehow in these psychopathic minds to fuel each other's actions. Problem with the 9/11 truthers, people are horrified when they see the reports after 9/11 of Muslims celebrating what happened with 9/11 overseas. And yet then, as you pointed out, we will undoubtedly have some people in a certain segment of society looking at this and going, oh, yay, great for Von Braun.
Harry, like Al-Qaeda, they like to destroy us, and they will work with anyone. There are also people like white supremacists or 9/11 truthers that would also like to destroy the country. They'll work with anybody they can.
Continuing the conflation of the hate-filled fringe with those of us who love peace, truth, liberty, and question the events of 9/11. There's so much lies and disinfo and garbage in that clip, we can't even go into all of it. Of course, they have no proof of anything of him being connected to 9/11 truth. Myself being involved with it for 6+ years, never heard of the guy. As no one else that I follow or work with or follow the work of has ever heard of this guy. It's fringe racist garbage. And I spit in the face of any of this garbage that connects me or anyone else connected to truth, liberty, and questioning 9/11 to bullshit like this. Glenn Beck and his ilk will be exposed as the liars that they are, as will the other phony side. Let's run down the rest of the list before we get to the massive clip that breaks down the Von Braun situation. One of the main ones coming from Examiner.com, Holocaust Museum shooter, a 9/11 truther who hated neocons. Again, no proof whatsoever. No one's ever heard of the guy. But of course, he was a guy who said, oh, it's the Jews. Jews did 9/11. Bullshit. Fox host defends the Homeland Security report on right-wing extremists. Media portrays shooter as anti-government extremist. Holocaust Museum shooter had close ties to prominent neo-Nazis, and there is a connection between Von Braun and FreeRepublic.com. ScholarsandRogues.com asks if it's time for the War on Terror 2.0. Again, pointing out what we said all along, the Homeland Stupidity apparatus isn't for the brown people who hate us for our freedoms. It's for you. Because as the shit goes down, you're not going to like it. And you're going to get kind of angry. And the Stasi is all for you. There's a nice interview with one of Von Braun's racist friends who even says this is what happens when white people are provoked. Again, the BBC asking if this is a right-wing backlash against Obama. McClatchy has an interview with a reporter who had an early encounter with Von Braun. The L.A. Wiesenthal Center has beefed up security. An anti-violence play that was set to debut the night of the shooting was canceled, a play about a fictional meeting between Anne Frank and Emmett Till. Von Braun's writings did not trigger a probe before the shooting. That's from the Washington Post. And finally, not quite finally, Olbermann, of course, drags Ron Paul into the Von Braun picture. That's from Truth News, and we also have the video, and we've also noted many, many times that the controlled opposition, Keith Olbermann, Sports Night, Amy Goodman, Rachel Maddow, all of their General Electric, Microsoft, NBC ilk, continuing the phony left-right parade. I think the puppet on the left is more to my like. Oh, I think the puppet on the left is more of my beliefs. Hey, there's someone holding both strings. The last thing I'll note before I play the massive clip I've put together for you. In looking through all of this, I found a clip on YouTube on the Associated Press channel, which I recommend you subscribe to. They had a quick little interview with a guy from the ADL, the Anti-Defamation League, warning about lone wolves. It enraged me so much, I instantly recorded a video response, as it's called on YouTube. So if you go to that video or mine, You can link back and forth where the Anti-Defamation League warns of lone wolves, where I basically break down the phony left-right paradigm, and when the phony right is in control, the enemy's over there. When the fake left is in control, the enemy is within. I'm going to take a little breather as we listen to the clip about James Von Brunn, elderly, ex-military, racist, opens fire at the D.C. Holocaust Museum.
Police say just before 1 p.m., a man walked into the Holocaust Museum in Washington and immediately began firing with a long rifle. Security guards fired back.
I saw the security man pull out his gun. He fired some rounds. I saw another man go down towards the floor. He was bleeding, and I really wasn't sure. After that, I just ran back inside. We heard like 5 rounds altogether, and we were just scared and waiting for instructions just to see what we would do.
Maria Hernandez was visiting the museum with her grandparents. Some remained calm.
But other people were running, hitting the floor. We were scared, just shaking, just trying to see what was going on.
Another visitor heard 4 shots.
It was really quick. I heard 4 boom, 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 boom. And nobody at the time really knew what it was. And then I saw these 3 kids running my way, and you could see the look in their face that something was really, really wrong.
Law enforcement officials tell the Associated Press that this man is being investigated as the prime suspect in the shooting. These images are from James Von Brunn's website. He's described as an elderly white supremacist. Police described the shooter as a lone gunman.
We had no prior information. There was no prior threats of this nature about this incident. So it appears to be a lone gunman who entered into the museum and opened fire with what appears to be a rifle at this point.
The guard was later pronounced dead. D.C.'s mayor says the gunman is listed in critical condition. In 1983, Von Brunn was convicted of attempting to kidnap members of...
Let me bring in Jack Levin, who is a criminologist and an expert on hate crimes. Here's what we're hearing at this point, Jack, that this was a man, we're being told, named James W. Von Brunn, an 89-year-old or so, depending on when his birthday is this year, man who is known to belong to some white supremacist organizations, anti-government groups, and apparently, and this is according to NBC's Pete Williams, was convicted after he walked into the Federal Reserve back in 1981 with a shotgun and apparently told people he wanted to take hostages. He thought the Federal Reserve was responsible for high interest rates. And so they arrested him and they took him to jail, angry over that. What's your take on an 89-year-old guy who, according to the report as it stands now, walked into the Holocaust Museum and opened fire?
Well, first of all, people tend to mellow out with age. So it is quite unusual to see someone of such advanced age do such a hideous act of violence, even if it's related to hate. I would have to say that this is part of the Obama effect. You know, most people like Obama. He's a unifying force for many Americans, as well as residents of other countries around the world who like him. But at the same time, he's generated kind of a backlash of white supremacy in this country, so that there are more members of these groups than we've seen in a long time. There are some Americans, not many, but there are some who feel threatened. There's an African American in the White House. There are Jews who are surrounding this African American president. Jews and blacks in the White House at the highest levels of government, boy, that's threatening to someone who sincerely believes that blacks are subhumans, that Jews are the children of the devil, and I think that's what's happening right now.
U.S. President Barack Obama has condemned the shooting of a security guard at the country's Holocaust Museum. The incident happened after an 88-year-old man, reputed to be a white supremacist, opened fire in front of crowds of people inside the museum in Washington, D.C. It was the latest in a string of high-profile hate crimes to hit the country within a month. An abortion doctor was shot dead in Kansas, and an army soldier was shot and killed by a Muslim convert in Arkansas. So how big is the threat of homegrown extremism in the U.S.? Well, joining me live from Washington is investigative journalist Wayne Masson. Wayne, first of all, what do you know about the man behind the attack?
Well, James Van Brunn was a long-time practitioner of this type of hate speech. He was expressed neo-Nazi sentiments. And the other thing is, Mr. Van Brunn, at 88 years old, was very prolific at using the Internet. He has several postings on a number of extreme right-wing websites, which is maybe considered somewhat unusual for a person of his age, being such a prolific user of the Internet. But his ex-wife says that he was always a person who preached hatred, and she said that it was like a cancer that was growing on this individual. So this was clearly somebody with a very long track record of being involved in these various hate groups around the United States.
You say various incidents have occurred, and this is a series of several incidents in the country in the past few weeks. Now, are they coincidences, or is there a deeper reason behind the cycle?
Now, we know James Van Brunn was a white supremacist. What we do not know is what led up to this and what the specific motive was. But there is news on that front this morning. We just spoke to an acquaintance, Mr. John DeNugent, a self-described white separatist who spoke and emailed with Van Brunn leading up to this act. Here's what he had to say.
What did you think when you heard about the shooting? Did you immediately let your mind go to him?
Actually, I did when I talked with him, I guess, about 2 weeks ago. He'd given away his computer and turned over the website to somebody else. And, well, you know, when you hear about people giving away precious things, it makes you think that something bad is going to happen.
And what might be a possible motive here? What had been done to him with Social Security? How he felt about things? Tell me about that again.
Well, I don't think Social Security, again, I think at least a year ago, his Social Security was slashed. And he felt that this was a direct result of somebody in the federal government reading his website and punishing him for his politically incorrect opinions. I think the election of Barack Obama became a tremendous signal of alarm for him.
So in terms of motive, yeah. You also believe that his emails have gotten more violent.
Yes, he was advocating direct action, that the time for talk was over. I think he was pushed over the edge by current events and his own personality.
Now, you describe him as a lone wolf, but we have information that he was found with a list of other leaders potentially on him, that list may have included, or there may have been a separate list of other locations. Can you be sure that he didn't have anyone egging him on or helping him in this, or that there wasn't a larger plan?
I would doubt that there was any larger plan because of his personality. He didn't have any following, didn't have any group. Most of the people I know had never met him in person, just as I never have. And he's just one of the many loners.
Let me throw something out to you, Mr. DeNugent, in terms of what lesson might be learned from this situation. You think there's any chance it might make people in your community rethink your beliefs a little bit when you see what kind of end they can come to?
Well, it certainly is a tragedy. When white people are provoked, some of them will snap.
This is the perfect story that conflates gun violence, the Federal Reserve, racism, 9/11 truth, all of it. Right on time, right on schedule. Of course, a week after Obama at Buchenwald talking about 9/11 conspiracies and the Holocaust conspiracies. And it's interesting, again, oh, he was part of no group, but he was a lone wolf. Again, saying, well, oh, God, you better watch out for lone wolves. Oh, you better watch out for people that are in groups. Oh, you better watch out for people who talk about 9/11. Oh, you better watch out for people who talk about the Federal Reserve. For what it's worth, let me go on the record right now again and say I repudiate violence in every way. I will have nothing to do with this. If you want to try and paint me with this kind of brush, I reject it. I spit it out. 9/11 truth and asking questions is purely American. Now we're going to have to keep moving if we're going to get even halfway through the rest of this horrible news. But again, this is huge. This is bad. This is very, very, very bad. So during that long clip, in addition to stepping out for a quick smoke break to cool my jets, I was chatting with some of the folks at zeropointradio.com/chat.html. Again, thanks to the folks at Zero Point Radio, rebroadcasting MediaMonarchy.com live. ZeroPointRadio.com, as well as 92.3 in Casper, Wyoming. Hello and welcome aboard to all of you. Let me also take this moment to say we're into hour number two. That flew really quickly. We're into hour number two of episode 127 of MediaMonarchy.com. It's June 12th, 2009. My name's James Evan Pilato, your host and webmaster of MediaMonarchy.com, the site and show. I'm a peace lover. I am nonviolent. That is what will win. Let's forge forward, my friends. Let's do a quick 6/11 news purge with, appropriately enough, a couple quick 9/11 updates. Obama may toss full trials for alleged 9/11 plotters. That's from the AFP, as well as the Raw Story, as well as all around the world, which basically essentially means do not pass go, do not collect $200. You don't get a trial, just you go straight to death. We've got a flashback from historycommons.org. February 20th, 1981, a Boeing 707 nearly hit the TV mast atop the World Trade Center. And finally, a nice interview with USA Today with Mos Def, who, in addition to, they're basically talking about his new record, he, of course, said on the topic of 9/11 that he's a New Yorker and it just doesn't feel right. Of course, he is a noted 9/11 truther, getting into it with Bill Maher on Real Time. And of course, Bill Maher controlled opposition. See, that's where you guys lose me with your crazy 9/11 stuff. We're going to get a little bit more into that later. Drug war notes. U.S. to ramp up intel efforts in the drug war. Drones versus drugs. Psychiatric drugs eyed for adolescents. U.K. government to ban legal highs. Those are herbal highs. And a good note from WPRI.com and swiped by me and posted up to YouTube.com/Media Monarchy. Rhode Island Senate passes medical marijuana compassion center bill.
Probably the best medical cannabis we have.
George DeRoe shows Eyewitness News the marijuana he smokes to cure what he calls his chronic pain. He's one of the nearly 700 patients registered with the Rhode Island Department of Health in their medical marijuana program.
I was skeptical at first because of all the various connotations that would come along with that and so forth, and I'm a father of two.
And now a new bill may help DeRoe get his marijuana. Awesome. If it becomes law, it would allow so-called compassion centers to sell pot to registered patients. Representative Thomas Slater is the sponsor of the House bill and a cancer patient himself.
A place for a sick person to pick up their marijuana.
Absolutely. And are we going to tell you where they are? No, because the health department will tell the people with medical marijuana where they can go.
Medical marijuana was legalized in Rhode Island in 2006, but the law never provided a clear path for patients to obtain their drugs. DeRoe says he's been robbed and had a gun held to his head trying to get it.
Due to circumstances of getting marijuana on the streets, yes, I've had a gun pointed at me 7 times.
And now this compassion center should be somewhere that patients can go to safely obtain the medicine their doctors recommend.
Governor Kachiri, a longtime critic, is expected to veto the bill like he's done in the past, but both chambers have enough votes to override that veto. Representative Slater says an accomplishment.
Who knows, next time you talk to me, I may be smoking a marijuana cigarette.
And if enacted, the law would allow up to 3 marijuana stores here in Rhode Island. We're told that Project AIDS has already filed an application to be one of them. Reporting live from the Providence Mobile Newsroom, Catherine Sotnick, Eyewitness News.
There's a couple funny comments on my YouTube video of that clip where somebody says, you pointed a gun 7 times? Jeez, dude, you maybe need to find a less shady weed dealer. But more seriously, do you see the Obamasiah ending the drug war? Do you see him doing any of those phony things you thought you were voting for? No, it's only continuing and escalating. On to geopolitics, North Korea jails two U.S. journalists, 12 years hard labor. Silence on North Korea detainments causes concern among the current TV staff where the two journalists work for. The last note on that one, the latest update from the Sacramento Bee. Experts say U.S. may be able to negotiate the reporter's release from North Korea as U.S. preps for possible showdown with Pyongyang. And from The Independent out of the U.K., where North Korea would use nuclear weapons in a, quote, merciless offensive. Offensive is the appropriate word for all of this. It's all highly offensive. Gates, again, Robert Gates. You remember, that was Bush's Secretary of Defense. Oh, that's right, it's Obama's Secretary of Defense. He says we can take down a North Korean missile. Again, sometimes akin to shooting a bullet out of the sky with another bullet. We also, unfortunately, as the death and destruction and murder and mayhem rages, a bomb killed at least 11 in a blast at a Pakistan hotel.
A security barrier, all that's between terrorists and a successful attack. And as you can see here, the truck bombers didn't even need to stop because they were thought to be delivering supplies to the hotel. The CCTV cameras also pick up shadows in the bushes. At the same time, gunmen creep in, apparently disguised in security guard uniforms. Then the explosion. Daylight exposed the full extent of the damage at the Pearl Continental. The truck bomb had been exploded in front of the lobby. Well practiced and well executed, this is the latest of seven deadly attacks in recent weeks, reducing parts of the four-story building to rubble. With police and army teams now swamping the hotel, security ramps are being used in full view of the cameras. But for the people who stayed in this hotel, it's a security measure being operated to full effect a day too late.
Pakistan, of course, being the new front for the war of terror. Moving down the geopolitics list, in an op-ed piece, Gorbachev has called for a new American revolution. Thanks there, Mikhail. We didn't ask for your opinion, and aren't you running late for another Louis Vuitton photo shoot, you whore? China runs the Great Wall 6 anti-terror drills that are supposedly wrapping up today. Kyrgyzstan says, sorry, Obama, we're still giving you the boot, kicking out the U.S. from the Manas Air Force Base. Shell Oil has settled the Nigerian case, of course, when they were involved covertly in killing opposition. And of course, rather than have all the dirty details all come out, they just settle out of court because they've got the oil money. And most recently, six were arrested in a suspected plot to attack the G8, which I believe is next week. Pre-crime. They had, of course, nothing. They were maybe trying to scope some stuff out, but again, like most of these big busts, it's pre-crime. Minority Report. War horrors. U.S. remains top military spender, peace researchers say. That's from the Deutsche Press Agency, as well from SpaceWar.com. U.S., China, and Russia lift arms spending to a new record. And if Brzezinski has his way, those will be the three in the battle to end all battles. And lastly, one note of West Virginia worry for my home state of West Virginia. By way of the San Francisco Guardian, judges told to avoid cases involving big donors. This came from a Supreme Court of the United States decision, and this involves Massey Energy, big money, and corrupt judges in West Virginia. So, we just mentioned Mr. Grand Chessboard himself, Zbigniew Brzezinski. This ties in, again, with Obama's Middle Eastern holiday. But this from Steve Watson. Zbig slams the conspiratorial view, while noting, of course, the 1953 overthrow of Iran. During a discussion with MSNBC's Rachel Maddow last Friday, Trilateral Commission co-founder and top Obama advisor Zbigniew Brzezinski spoke of those who question the official version of events on 9/11 in the same context as those who deny the Holocaust. Again, kids, this was before the Von Braun shooting. The two were analyzing Barack Obama's Cairo speech, and in particular, Obama's tacit warning regarding 9/11 truth.
I'm aware that there's still some who would question or even justify the offense of 9/11. But let us be clear. Al-Qaeda killed nearly 3,000 people on that day. The victims were innocent men, women, and children from America and many other nations who had done nothing to harm anybody. And yet Al-Qaeda chose to ruthlessly murder these people, claimed credit for the attack, and even now states their determination to kill on a massive scale. They have affiliates in many countries and are trying to expand their reach. These are not opinions to be debated. These are facts to be dealt with. These are not opinions to be debated. These are facts to be dealt with.
Let us never tolerate outrageous conspiracy theories concerning the attacks of September the 11th. Malicious lies that attempt to shift the blame away from the terrorists themselves. Away from the guilty.
Joining us now is Dr. Zbigniew Brzezinski, former National Security Advisor for President Carter, proud father of Mika, the co-host on Morning Joe on this network. Dr. Brzezinski, it is always a pleasure to have you here. Thanks for your time.
Rachel, it's nice to be with you.
President Obama acknowledged today that the U.S. government helped overthrow the Iranian government in 1953. Has a president ever admitted to that before?
Not to my knowledge.
What do you think the implication of that is?
Remember, however, that he also mentioned in the same breath the taking of American diplomats as hostages by the Iranians.
Yes.
In effect, what he was saying was, if we're to go forward, if we're to have a normal relationship, we cannot rehash the past. Each of us has something to be apologetic about or to regret about, but let's go forward. Let's not exchange accusations. Let's see if we can structure a more normal relationship. It was a gutsy speech.
In terms of the willingness to be honest about uncomfortable truths, uncomfortable history like that, do you think that will have an effect moving forward of opening up some doors that may have been closed, either in terms of the opinion on the Arab street of what's possible with America or in dealing with specific Middle Eastern leaders?
I think this speech was a very courageous statement of his political philosophy and previewing the strategy that he'll follow. It was not, as you have already said, a policy speech. Nonetheless, by redefining what America means to the world and how America views the world and how Islam and America should view each other, I think he has laid the basis for a much more constructive, much more effective American foreign policy. So I consider this speech to be a watershed and a particularly gutsy statement by a president who laid it on the line in a way that it should have been laid on the line, and thereby undoing some of the damage inflicted on America over the last 8 years by an administration that was Manichaean in its attitude, that engaged in Islamophobia, that united Islamic extremists with Islamic moderates to our disadvantage.
When the president took time, and he went into both of these issues in some detail, he took time to debunk both 9/11 conspiracists and deniers of the Holocaust, and then announced pointedly that he was on his way to Buchenwald next. Is there a reason to believe that he thinks that those issues are holding back political progress, that those specific sort of conspiracies and misconceptions about modern political history are part of the problem in terms of moving forward?
There's no doubt that in recent years, both many Americans viewed the world in very, very skewed fashion, and many outside of America had a totally conspiratorial view of America, including even the idea that 9/11 was somehow or other a put-up job that it really wasn't done by Osama bin Laden and others. So I think President Obama is breaking through a whole mythology that has paralyzed American dealings with the world. I think this speech could now be the point of departure for a really constructive policy towards Israel and Palestine and towards Iran. And these are two major problems that need to be addressed if there is to be stability in the Middle East and if we are eventually to extract ourselves from that region in which we risk becoming bogged down militarily.
Because, of course, Brzezinski wants us to go at it with Russia. Again, folks, this was just mere days before the Von Braun shooting, again, as if this were all a grand script and it's all being played out perfectly, which it is. And it is. Continuing the Steve Watson article, referring to the clip we just heard, the Orwellian doublespeak on display here is astounding, given that in the same breath, Brzezinski and Maddow allude to the fact that in the same speech, Obama also admitted that the U.S., via the Central Intelligence Agency, played a role in the overthrow of a democratically elected Iranian government in 1953, Operation Ajax, a fact that the criminal intelligence apparatus then attempted to bury and keep secret for decades. How on earth did the two expect to get away with denouncing the American people as skewed for not swallowing the official government line on 9/11 when said government has been engaged in such criminal actions for generations? Indeed, Brzezinski himself has even previously warned of false flag attacks being used to kickstart wars, yet here he is now comparing such lines of thought to Holocaust denial. The total hypocrisy of the man defies belief. A nice update from 9/11 Reports, an open letter to Rachel Maddow. Miss Maddow, I saw the bit on NBC with your guest, Big New Brzezinski. Perhaps you haven't examined the official myth about 9/11, i.e. that it was accomplished solely by al-Qaeda and bin Laden. Given that Obama made a claim and didn't back it up with any facts while admitting that elements within the U.S. and Britain conspired to overthrow Mossadegh a half century ago, it's kind of a misnomer to say he debunked 9/11 conspiracists. And given the many lies told by the Bush administration principals about 9/11, and given the 9/11 Commission's failure to conduct a full and honest investigation, who's to say what really happened on 9/11? The 9/11 Commission ignored 70% of the 9/11 family's questions. And your employer, Miss Maddow, General Electric Microsoft National Broadcasting Corporation, published a report that says 25% of the 9/11 Commission report, including the sections most relevant to linking 9/11 to al-Qaeda and bin Laden, was based on testimony obtained by torture. With a link to MSNBC for said report. Again, Maddow, Olbermann, Chomsky, Goodman, all the fake, phony, controlled opposition left. Which brings us to Obamasiah and the Apostles of War, Changeluyah, where CBS News, by way of Politico, notes that Obama so far has invoked Jesus way more often than Bush ever did. We have a nice quote from the Obamasiah. I am confident that we can create a kingdom right here on earth. Now we're going to note quickly, Evan Thomas of Newsweek, in two different instances, has been calling Obama the great God and teacher.
Obama, we're understanding what Obama is. He's the great teacher. He's this guy who stands above everybody. There's some kind of sentient in it, but he stands above everybody and says, now listen, you people have to stop blaming each other unreasonably. You have to get along here, and I'm gonna show you the way. It is a pretty brave role in many ways.
Well, we were the good guys in 1984, but that way it hasn't felt that way in recent years. So Obama's had really a different task. We've seen too often as the bad guys, and he is a very different job from Reagan. Was all about America. You talked about Obama is, we are above that now. We're not just parochial. We're not just chauvinistic. We're not just provincial. We stand for something. I mean, in a way, Obama's standing above the country, above the world. He's sort of God. He's going to bring all different sides together.
That's Evan Thomas of Newsweek, and we're in big trouble. Obama in Cairo, a bush in sheep's clothing. Obama's French food was tested by a taster. That's from the AFP. Most Arabs knew that Obama's big speech makes little difference. The feds are on a search for a man allegedly on a mission to kill the president, and he has 8 registered firearms. That coming from InfoWars as well as ABC News. U.S. military technology easily shipped abroad, according to U.S. audit. Again, from the AFP, iStockAnalyst.com, asking the question, is Obama selling military secrets to China for debt forgiveness? Mudd's name is Mudd. Nominee pulls out as role at CIA is studied. Of course, a lot of these guys never make it through the confirmation process because they're all dirty. And generally, even when they're not involved in CIA torture, they're not paying their taxes or employing illegal immigrants. Sotomayor, a member of the female version of the Bohemian Grove. That's the Belizean Grove. And she also, unfortunately, broke her ankle just a few days ago. 20-plus czars in 55 months of major government expansion. Obama czars, hand puppets, and evil despots. That's from businessandmedia.org. And we note from eweek.com, a Microsoft executive might be Obama's cyber czar pick. The first Gitmo detainee has arrived in the U.S., and he has pled not guilty. A small Montana town wants to be the new Gitmo. Ron Paul, in an interview with HuffingtonPost.com, talks foreign policy. New face, same policies. Again, the CIA urges judge to keep Bush-era documents sealed. We've noted, of course, before that Cheney and Rumsfeld and the CIA, they like to hide stuff. They've been doing it since the 70s in the Church Commission. Yahoo nukes a Flickr account over Obama comments. That's from Gawker. Obama's era of openness is closed. That's Robert Perry at Consortium News. A great bit from John Voight in the Washington Times, where he calls Obama a good actor. House votes against releasing torture photos. Of course, no surprise, no change. And finally, Panetta of the Clinton era, now the CIA chief. He says bin Laden is, he's in Pakistan. Yeah, that's it. That's by way of Yahoo. And now, in a way to maybe clear the air and maybe set things a little straight, just in case you might be confused a little bit about it, the man the Democrats should have nominated, Kucinich, speaks out against Afghan-Iraq wars.
The chair will entertain requests for one-minute speeches. What purpose does the gentleman from Ohio rise?
Mr. Speaker, I request permission to address the House for 1 minute.
Without objection.
It's good our administration is reaching out to the Muslim world. It's bad to spend another $100 billion to keep wars going, which will kill innocent Muslims in Iraq, Afghanistan, and Pakistan. It's good we try to create an incentive for people to buy efficient cars. It's bad the car vouchers will not be expressly for the purpose and purchase of cars made in America. It's even worse that we tie such an incentive to a war funding bill. Cash for clunkers and bunkers in the same bill. Cash for more war in Iraq, Afghanistan, and Pakistan. Cash to help China sell its cars to Americans. Meanwhile, back in the U.S. of A., factories and auto dealers are closing. People are losing their businesses, their jobs, their homes, their health care, their investments, their retirement security. Who are these people who keep coming up with these innovative ideas to keep wars going and to move jobs out of America? Who are these people? Iraq did not have weapons of mass destruction, had no intention or capability of attacking the United States, had nothing to do with Al-Qaeda's role in 9/11. Each and every statement made by the previous administration in support of going to war turned out to be false. Yet here we are, a new administration and the same old war and expansion of the war in Afghanistan. We cannot afford these wars spiritually. They are wars of aggression and they're based on lies. We cannot afford these wars financially. They add trillions to our national debt and destroy our domestic agenda. We cannot afford the human cost of these wars, the loss of lives of our beloved troops, and the deaths of innocent civilians in Iraq, Afghanistan, and Pakistan. So why do we do this? Why do we keep funding wars when they're so obviously against truth and justice and when they undermine our military? These are matters of heart and conscience, which must be explored. Our ability to bring an end to these wars will be the real test of our power.
Gentlemen's time has expired.
Aren't these the questions that the supposed left once answered? Aren't these the ideals that the fake left claims to embody? Aren't you fucking ashamed that you didn't vote with your heart instead of voting for a winner? You will be. One flashback note, and very important one indeed, going back to June of last year, Kucinich presents Bush impeachment articles. On to the next story, but of course, it's nothing new. Military-backed public schools on the rise in the U.S. Again, from the Associated Press. Gee, we just can't seem to get away from them. But if they keep pushing the, we don't want your fair use, we'll dump them altogether. The U.S. Marine Corps is wooing public school districts across the country, expanding a network of military academies that has grown steadily despite criticism that it is a recruiting ploy. The Marines are talking with at least six districts, including in suburban Atlanta, New Orleans, and Las Vegas, about opening schools where every student wears a uniform, participates in junior ROTC, and takes military classes. Again, this is nothing new. Hit the flashback link to March of this year. Despite protests, DeKalb goes with Marines School. My man Garth, who runs Lost Dog Coffee in Shepherdstown, West Virginia, noted on my Facebook page, which again, I sometimes get ill as I scroll down to Facebook and see everybody taking quizzes and wasting their time. I use my Facebook page to just, it automatically imports my Media Monarchy feed. So hopefully I'm rattling cages and ruffling feathers over there, but my man Garth noticed, yeah, that's been going on for a long time. Something else that's been going on for a long time, this from securitiesindustry.com, CIA to recruit Wall Street pros. As if the CIA and Wall Street haven't been intimately connected for decades, just check out Alan Dulles. The CIA is recruiting Wall Street executives, former investment banksters, security analysts, and hedge fund managers to help catch terrorists, according to a story in the New York Post. The spy agency is advertised for a $160,000 annual salary on Bloomberg Radio, a 24-hour all-news radio station. While the same executives may have been responsible for the current financial crisis, the CIA says they can use their intelligence for the work of the nation. The agency says that it needs the executives to track the financial maneuvers of Afghan drug traffickers, as well as which economies are more susceptible to manipulation. The interviews are set for June 22nd in an undisclosed Manhattan location. The CIA is requesting that resumes be emailed only. That story would be hilarious if it weren't so sad. Of course, we want to use their intelligence work to track Afghan drug traffickers, as if you don't know. And to find out which economies are more susceptible to manipulation, which pretty much says to me, you're looking to manipulate economies, which you do and which you've done for a long, long time. Now from the Deutsche Press Agency, a State Department retiree and his wife accused of spying for Cuba. And again, that's been going on for decades.
Dramatic story that is unfolding in Washington right now. A former State Department official and his wife under arrest, accused of spying for the Cuban government for almost 30 years. Let's go straight to our foreign affairs correspondent, Jill Doherty. She's looking at the indictment, what we're seeing on paper right now, and it's very dramatic, including a secret meeting these two may have had with Fidel Castro.
Yeah, well, it sounds almost like a movie when you go through this, but essentially, the husband was working for the State Department, and back 30 years ago, going back to 1978, he was recruited, and he actually had top secret security clearance. They communicated, he and his wife, and his name is Walter Kendall Myers, 72 years old, called Agent 202. They communicated with their handlers in Cuba in amazing ways. They were using shortwave radio. They were also, as it's described in this press release from the FBI, the Justice Department, they were using shopping carts, changing shopping carts to give information. And then also in this indictment, they say they spent an evening with Fidel Castro, must have been secret, because obviously a State Department official couldn't go down to Cuba and just meet with the president back in 1995. So it's a very serious indictment. In fact, they're saying, the Assistant Attorney General is saying it's incredibly serious.
Sorry for the poor audio of that clip. However, you did hear her say, as we've heard it said many, many times, as, you know, and they say it without a trace of irony, gee, this is almost like a movie. Now to one of the other big stories of the last week, which has been growing and growing and growing, and it was gaining momentum fast, and now it has hit the tipping point, or at least a tipping point, Ron Paul's audit the Fed bill. I note at the top of this posting, Ron Paul's audit the Fed bill gaining momentum fast, with a link to help you contact your local rep and tell them to support H.R. 1207, where I note I called my representative, Little Bowtie Earl Blumenauer. It's super easy and effective. It took less than a minute. As soon as I hung up the phone, I realized, damn, I should have Skyped that so I could have recorded it and played the clip for you, illustrating how simple and easy it is to call up your rep. And I basically said, hey, co-sponsor that bill, man. I didn't vote for you, but if you did something like this, it might put you back on my good list. However, he's too busy traveling to China with Nancy Pelosi. The first clip on H.R. 1207, and of course, you sometimes can't argue with a little bit of sugar to help the medicine go down. It helps when there's a cutie girl talking about auditing the Federal Reserve.
A call-a-thon is underway to urge Congress to support H.R. 1207, which is the bill to audit the Federal Reserve. We only need 27 more in order to have a majority on this, and as of a few minutes ago, we just had our second call-a-thon targeted representative crossover and co-sponsor the bill. I'm keeping an updated list of call-a-thon targets at breakthematrix.com, so check in often for updates and add your non-compliant reps to the list. Now, if you don't know why it's so important to audit the Federal Reserve, consider this. The Fed is a private institution that is in charge of our entire money supply. Just in the past year, they've printed or guaranteed over $2 trillion, and they answer to no one. The government has absolutely no oversight of their activities, nor are they allowed to see what the Fed has been doing with our money. This issue affects every American, and more of us are realizing there's something going on behind closed doors of the Fed that they don't want the American people to know about. In fact, the surging support for H.R. 1207 has the Fed worried. So worried, in fact, that they've just hired veteran lobbyist Linda Robertson to lead a PR campaign to try to stop H.R. 1207. Now, there's much more to the story, so please check my notes for more info on the Fed and why H.R. 1207 is so critical, as well as links for you to contact your reps. And thank you for all the calls, tweets, blog posts, etc. supporting our little call-a-thon. It's working, so keep it up. Until next time, I'm Shelley Roach. Thanks for watching.
We have another clip on H.R. 1207. Here's Ron Paul with an interview on goldseek.com.
Could you please give us a synopsis to our listeners regarding the legislation and stated goals and what you hope to accomplish?
The main thing, it is an audit bill, but the process is this. The Fed was created in 1913. It's never been audited in the true sense of the word. They have token audits, and they measure how many checks they clear and how many dollars are transferred around the country. That's sort of academic exercise. There's been always some populists and others who over the years have asked for audits, and in the 70s, we had some rough economic times. There was a demand for transparency. So in 1978, they passed a bill that was supposed to give us the authority to audit the Fed. They gave it to the GAO, the Government Accounting Office. But when they passed the bill, they very shrewdly, and this is something we have to look out for right now, they very shrewdly behind the scenes said, yes, you now can audit the Federal Reserve, except for. And then they listed all the exceptions, which were things like monetary policy, the deals they make with other central banks, and all the secret hearings they hold on monetary policy. All the things that you need to know about what they're doing were excluded from the audit. And what we do in this bill is we actually go back and we repeal those exceptions to the rule, and then we require within 1 year that the GAO perform an audit. We believe then reform would come. Reform may come anyway, but it's best that we know what they've been doing and why. Because I think the opposition, those who love the fiat, maybe they're even working on international fiat currency, would be ready and willing to come up with an alternative system. So we have to, you know, get a bill like this passed to show what kind of shenanigans they've been involved in and who are the special interests. And then maybe we can get a step toward sound money rather than just making these problems worse by allowing some UN agency or the IMF deal with this. There is a move, and I'm sure you're aware of it, where they would like to use these special drawing rights, the SDRs, under the IMF as an international reserve currency, which, quite frankly, would be a disaster. Probably wouldn't work anyway.
That's Ron Paul on goldseek.com. And we'll note, of course, he said the financial problems in the 70s. That would be under Carter when he had Paul Adolf Volcker as Treasury Secretary, which, if you'll note, the Obamasiah has brought back into the fold. What is old is new again. I do have two other clips that I prepared, but I won't have time to do everything else if we hit them, so we'll blast through the rest of this and hit it with one last big button. But first, we noted, of course, and heard the Fed's going to hire an ex-Enron lobbyist to counter H.R. 1207. Great work there from washingtonsblog.com. There is a clip from Ron Paul on the Alex Jones Show from just the other day. There's an article from Steve Watson about the bill when it had 207 co-sponsors. We also had a clip from CNBC where Jim Grant, editor of Grant's Interest Rate Observer, told CNBC that the Federal Reserve would be shut down if it were audited. BFI Capital supports H.R. 1207. We now know that it has the required number of co-sponsors, and the Audit the Fed bill is going to go to debate on the House floor. But finally, to throw cold water on the whole thing, from Lee Rogers at roguegovernment.com, unfortunately pointing out harsh truths and pissing on the parade sometimes in a necessary way when the Truth and Patriot movement gets all crazy, patting ourselves on the back. Auditing the Fed will not result in positive monetary reforms. People are hailing the fact that Ron Paul's Audit the Fed bill is gaining momentum. Unfortunately, it really doesn't matter if the bill gets passed or not. The IMF was already pondering the possibility of auditing the Fed back in 2008, and any audit of this institution will only prompt calls from establishment bootlickers to bring more international control over the banking system. There are already calls for global currency, and in order to have this, the U.S. dollar, which has previously served as the world's reserve currency for decades, will need to go away. Simply put, any audit of the Fed will be used by the banksters to justify setting policies that will move us closer to the establishment of a global central bank. It will not be used to justify the dissolution of this diabolical money trust and the restoration of a sound free market monetary system. Jumping to the bottom. It is true that an investigation into the privately run Federal Reserve is sorely needed, considering the obvious lack of transparency and corruption that this institution has been known for throughout its existence. However, an audit of this institution will merely be used by the establishment to increase their control over the global financial system. The establishment will merely utilize the classic problem-reaction-solution formula that they have used for years to consolidate their power. Obviously, the Federal Reserve is a mess, but the results of any audit will allow these people to sell the dumb American sheep a phony solution. It's unfortunate to say, but people who believe that Ron Paul's legislation will result in any real, substantive change are gravely mistaken. Sad, but possibly probably true, words from Lee Rogers at roguegovernment.com. So as long as we're talking about the economy crash, let's hit the headlines. The depression quietly deepens. Bob Chapman up on globalresearch.ca notes that we'll never know the true story, the true inside story of what really went on. Obama promises summer speed up of economic recovery. Again, Global Research notes that White House had long planned General Motors and Chrysler bankruptcies. And again, I told you guys, Chrysler was going to go down, General Motors was going to go down, but Ford, huh, you don't really hear much about them. Nazis. Paulson's secret talking points memo reveals that banks were forced to surrender ownership stakes to the government. That's from CNSnews.com. Obama officials say there's no magic bullet for auto companies. Boston Globe workers reject the plan. New York Times has hired Goldman Sachs to sell the Boston Globe. Airlines say the downturn is worse than 9/11. An article from Ron Paul on GM, Amtrak, and an increasingly fascist America. We note, of course, that Amtrak was taken over by the Gov years ago, and it was only going to be temporary. Chrysler's taken over by the Gov. It's only going to be temporary. GM's taken over by the Gov. It's only going to be temporary. Oakland considers bankruptcy. Schwarzenegger to terminate textbooks in California. That's from Sky News. That is on the Econo Crash tip because, of course, we're losing California. But as a way to save money and way to probably be greener, we're just going to use computers. And again, the memory hole will have fully formed. Arcander, a retail and tourism giant, goes bust. Top Chinese banker calls for wider use of the yuan. Two Japanese citizens carrying $134 billion in questionable U.S. bonds detained in Italy. First from Cryptagon with a translated Italian story, but Wikinews picked it up. Italian border guards seize $134 billion in U.S. bonds at the Swiss border. I can't begin to really wrap my head around this story, and we don't know a whole lot yet. Italian police at the Guardia di Finanza have seized $134 billion in U.S. bonds at the Swiss border. The bonds were being transported by two men claiming Japanese citizenship, arriving by train, and were undeclared. They were uncovered by inspectors beneath a false bottom in a suitcase. If genuine, Italian law will permit the government to seize 40% of the value, that's some $54 billion, for failure to declare the bonds. The Japanese Gov has said they are aware of the situation and that they are working with the Italian government to confirm the identity and nationality of the individuals. Joe Wiesenthal of the Business Insider speculates that the bonds are indeed forgeries. The United States no longer issues bonds in such high denominations. Furthermore, according to the U.S. Treasury, only the nations of China, Japan, and Russia own this much in U.S. debt instruments. Wikinews has been unable to confirm that Kennedy bonds were ever issued. The article that I stole for the title of this posting, "The Depression Quietly Deepens." That's an article from Ambrose Evans Pritchard up on the Telegraph. Russia may swap some U.S. treasuries for some IMF debt. Royal Canadian Mint has, they've lost gold worth a mint. And finally, more good work from We Are Change confronting Bernanke on his Bilderberg attendance. That's We Are Change Chicago. I believe some of the other We Are Change guys hit up Richard N. Haas of the CFR yet again. But let's move to Police State International, Nanny State, Lockdowns, Drills, and Disinfo, Dred Zeppelin, the Army's new surveillance blimp, by way of Popular Science, popsci.com. Again, that's not new. We've noted it many, many times before, but here it is yet again. CHIPS, California Highway Patrol, encourages residents to rat out out-of-state license plates. FEMA websites shows a martial law exercise. That's NLE 09. That's going to be with foreign troops. That's going to be at the end of July. That's National Level Exercise 09, replacing the tarnished name of Top Off. Again, involving FEMA, Northrop Grumman, foreign troops, and the first time in a terror drill where they're going to prevent a hypothetical terror attack. More on that very soon, and probably by way of my man, Clyde Lewis of the Ground Zero Lounge. Atlanta Airport tests security program. FBI's Mueller defends the use of informants against the Newburgh for, again, the latest provocateur patsies. GPS shoes being developed for Alzheimer's patients, and police lockdown in a New York school where they search lockers and impound cars after a student commits suicide.
We have an update now on the breaking news this midday from Canandaigua, where district officials tell us a student has committed suicide. It happened just after 11 o'clock this morning in the boys' bathroom at Canandaigua Academy. And officials tell us no one is in immediate danger. Students are being evacuated, though. Police are concerned about a bigger threat. They won't get into specifics, but that is why they are evacuating the school, searching students' lockers and impounding students' cars. We're going to have more on this story on 13wham.com, and we also have 13wham's Jane Flash joining us on the phone right now. Jane is in Canandaigua. I know you just got there, Jane. What do you know?
Well, Kelly, we can tell you the students are being evacuated one classroom at a time in a very orderly fashion. This morning, a student, a male, committed suicide in the bathroom. A gun was involved. At this point, police do not know whether he brought the gun in with him today or brought it in with him at another time, kept it in a locker, and retrieved it. Because of that, they have locked down the school, and they have done a systematic search of all of the lockers so far. They have turned up nothing, but what they are doing is something called a stage evacuation. That is one classroom at a time. They are calling students out. They're searching the students and then taking them directly out to buses. They are being bused from the school to the middle school. Parents are not being allowed here right now, but they can pick up their students at the middle school. Also, students are not being allowed to use their cell phones. We asked about why they're doing this way, and this is a procedure that is being done mostly for precautionary reasons, a program that started after 9/11 about safe evacuation.
Pretty much the entire police state track and trace control grid encapsulated in one seemingly simple suicide story out of New York. Uptown explosion is just a military exercise in Charlotte, North Carolina. That's from the Charlotte Observer. We also have Spokane Valley activists pushing for disincorporation in Washington. A UK mobile scanner could detect guns. Path stations in New York to take part in screening security, of course, with the TSA. Urbandale, Iowa man dies from beanbag rounds. Again, more non-lethal police state measures. The FBI investigates an anti-government gun range in Washington. Georgia student convicted of DC terror plot. More on that. Georgia man convicted for videotaping potential terrorism targets in DC. Family's pet chihuahua tasered and then shot dead by police in Cincinnati. Heated debate, but no vote yet on creating an AWOL haven in Bellingham, Washington. A lot of action going on in my neighbors to the north. The Texas grandma that got stun gunned, she's rightfully now suing. The CIA and Pentagon deploying RFID death chips coming soon to a product near you. That is an exclusive article from Tom Burkhart up on blacklistednews.com. UK pupils to be taught how to think. We also have London police accused of waterboarding suspects. And finally, a RoboCop gadget developed for the UK police. And that's just the headlines on one mere posting of the Police State International, Nanny State, Lockdowns, Drills, and Disinfo. Now we move on to the murder and mayhem, death and destruction, and order out of chaos. These are gruesome. And again, it ties in with the whole agenda. Colleagues say Tiller knew something was coming. Tiller's Kansas abortion clinic will not reopen, contrary to some of the thoughts and ideas earlier. That's from the Washington Post, as well as McClatchy. Again, Keith Olbermann, with his guest from the federal government, saying, why not waterboard Scott Roeder, the guy who killed Dr. Tiller? And then, Rachel Maddow. And the feminists say anti-abortion protesters becoming more hostile. Again, we note General Electric, Microsoft, NBC, fake, phony, left opposition, Olbermann and Maddow. Suspect calls recruiters killing retaliation. Of course, that's the Arkansas military recruiting shooter from just a couple weeks ago. Queens police ticketed a car as the owner lay dead inside. That's from the Independent. Again, it's always interesting when you have to go to the foreign press to learn about domestic issues. Again, from The Guardian, Google founder's mentor, who couldn't swim, found dead in his own swimming pool. Dozens of children killed in a child care center fire in Mexico. Two found shot in a New York motel. Cops say no foul play. Suspected it was just a murder-suicide. Coke dealer in Boston killed and cooked in order to avoid debt. An Oregon woman has been arrested and accused of cutting a baby from a womb. Both the mother and the baby, of course, are dead. human foot found at a Washington State construction site, Kansas Craigslist rapist found dead in his cell, an explosion at a ConAg plant in North Carolina happened. It was actually a Slim Jim plant, and after the dust settled, three were dead. Those come from Wikinews and Los Angeles Times. JFK plane diverted to Canada after a fire on board. Amidst police chase, robbers kill four pedestrians. And the follow-up to that from the Washington Times, where the Philadelphia police deny they were even chasing the subjects. By way of Alex Constantine, always following the ritual Satanistic murders and that whole underworld, convicted UK murderer strangled his cellmate, claiming Satan told him to do it because he was Satan's hands and eyes. We also have a human skull found in Connecticut sacrificial ritual rooms, police say. That's from Fox News. And finally, internationally, from TerraDaily.com, number of missing rises to 80 in a China landslide. Murder, mayhem, death, and destruction, order out of chaos. I see that we're about at 10 minutes left in the show. I still have an awful lot to go through. There's no way I'm going to be able to do it all, I realize now. So perhaps what I'll do is take a moment, take a breath, give you some of the quick headlines, and perhaps I'll go home and record a B-side, an addendum to episode 127. Where we will cover the latest in the cyberspace war, homeland hackers, and a paid internet, where, of course, media mogul Barry Diller has been quoted as saying that the internet will absolutely become a paid system within 5 years. Spy bugs, microchips, and more to be deployed for the 2012 Olympics in the UK. We've got the latest on swine flu and all the bioterror wars. And the pharmaceutical industrial complex, of course, important to note that as of yesterday, the World Health Organization, for the first time in 41 years, has gone to level 6, or DEFCON 1, if you like. It's a pandemic. That's not good. Not only for what we may be in store for this fall, but also for what happens when the bureaucracies set these things in paper, where they say, when Simon says X, that means shit's on, and we can do whatever we want. Just like if Bush Obama wanted to declare a state of national emergency, it's on. And of course, Peter Dale Scott and others have noted that the continuity of government procedures that were put into place on 9/11, we have no reason to believe whatsoever that they have been rescinded. The latest New World Order propaganda on primetime television, Earth 2100 and the depopulation agenda. I overheard a guy in my store the other day mention it to his friend as they were walking by. Dude, you watch Earth 2100, man, it's crazy. And I, of course, being the chatty big mouth that I am, couldn't let it go. I went over and found the guy. I was like, hey, man, were you just talking something about Earth 2100? Yeah, did you see it, man? It's scary. And I basically said, yeah, isn't that eugenics? Isn't it telling us we're all bad and we all need to die? Which, of course, he immediately said, oh, maybe we do need to be depopulated. And again, it's that kind of garbage that sinks my heart and makes me wonder if doing this is worth anything. It might be way, way, way too late. We've got the latest several episodes from my man Alex Ansari of Outside the Box, blasting out from right here in Portland, Oregon, by way of Portland Community Media. He, of course, also has a radio show on Oracle Broadcasting. And I also want to note the latest episode from Corbett Report, episode 89, Meet Donald Rumsfeld, where he asks, so what does an imperial legate of the New World Order look like? You'd be hard-pressed to find a better example than former Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld. From his Constitution-undermining continuity of government planning, to his poisonous aspartame pimping, to his North Korean nuclear technology wheeling and dealing, the latest episode uncloses Rummy's skeletons. Again, huge, huge respect and props to James Corbett. If there are shows that I kind of wish I could be like, but not really. I mean, I am what I am. I do the kind of show that I do. I'm a media guy. I like how James Corbett of the Corbett Report and Clyde Lewis of the Ground Zero Lounge do a weekly one-hour episode with a focused, investigated, researched topic, fleshed out A to Z. Of course, also want to note, my friends, don't forget about foodworldorder.com, my sister site, getting some help. Hopefully, it's going to blast off and pick up in the not-too-distant future, where we'll note the latest article on foodworldorder.com, strategy being devised to protect the use of BPA. So much like we've seen the Fed hiring lobbyists to combat, you know, people not liking the Fed, which of course now we'll see with Von Braun, will probably not be talked about all that much. But we also see, of course, places like Coke and manufacturers for beverages and foods trying to devise a public relations and lobbying strategy to block government bans of a controversial chemical used in the linings of metal cans and lids. We note an update from the LA Times where the California Senate has actually approved a ban on BPA in plastics. So again, those last several things I didn't really go into detail. Perhaps I will in a little bit. The cyberspace war, spy bugs and microchips in the 2012 Olympics, swine flu, Earth 2100, and the depopulation agenda. But that's going to do it. Let's look quickly at the quick list of creepy customers coming to MediaMonarchy.com in the past week. Again, if you're new to the show, I track the interesting visits to the site throughout the week through statcounter.com. You know, if you add a little counter to your website, it lets you into the back door to see how people are landing on your website. It's always interesting and a little bit freaky, and it can even turn you on to maybe what some of the spooks are looking at or interested in. So in the last week, we had the National Aeronautics and Space Administration visiting out of Pasadena, California. We had the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission out of Washington, D.C. They Googled Darwin G. Bowman Annandale. He, of course, being arrested and accused of the murder of ex-CIA contractor William Bennett. Again, as always, we had the headquarters of USAISC out of Fort Huachuca, Arizona. Nationwide TaxRelief.com out of Santa Monica. They Googled Thyssen Anger, Mumbai. The Church of Scientology, perhaps making their first, or at least on my end, documented visit to MediaMonarchy.com. You know what they Googled? Ewan Cameron. Otherwise known as the Memory Thief. Otherwise known as being involved in the CIA's declassified MKUltra mind control program. Not a conspiracy theory, fact. Unfortunately, there aren't enough facts. Wachovia, or Watchovia, if you like. Wachovia Corporation out of Winston-Salem, North Carolina. They hit me up from my link on groundzeromedia.org. We also had Lockheed Martin out of Denver, Colorado. Home of the new American capital. Perhaps deep underground in Denver, but that's all speculative and crazy. We had NORAD, Northcom.mil, U.S. Spacecom J6D out of, again, Colorado Springs. That's probably more of where the new U.S. brain will be of the North American Union. They were reading an old posting on MediaMonarchy.com, more combat units assigned to Homeland Brigade. That's right. Did you forget about that? They brought back troops from Iraq to round you up in case you get angry. We had the Department of Defense Network Information Center out of Washington, D.C., DISA.mil. They were reading U.S. Military Prepares for Cyber Command. And again, another visit, headquarters USAISC out of Fort Huachuca, Arizona. See? Those are the creepy customers. So, again, rather than being freaked out or scared about it, I just post it back up and put it right back out there and show you how they got there. And I don't really care how you got here, my friends. I'm just glad you're here. And this has been the 127th episode of MediaMonarchy.com. It's June 12th, 2009. My name is James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show. Again, thanks to you for listening. And please spread the word about the show. Again, I told you I'm in a really pissy bad mood, and there are really points where I feel like I could just chuck all this and walk away. Not like I want you to pat me on the back and say, oh, you're doing a good job. But for the love of God, get a little more activated. So again, thanks to the Portland Radio Authority, the Revere Radio Network, Free Radio Olympia, Boulder Free Radio, Cascadia Public Radio, and ZeroPointRadio.com, all for bringing you MediaMonarchy.com. So again, my name's James. I'm your host and webmaster, reminding you, imploring you, ordering you to get active or get radioactive. Take care.
Police would get him just the same.